The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Good morning. My name is Shelley Negrani, and I am a member of this congregation, and I'm your worship associate today. Together with all of the people who have contributed to this lay-led service, especially our video editor, Mark Sewell, I welcome you to Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation, which we lovingly refer to call Human. At Human, we offer no creed or dogma. Many of us come here because here we have the opportunity to engage in an open-minded and compassionate search for truth and for meaning, being mindful of the love we hold for one another and for the world in which we live. If you are visiting with us for the first time, a special welcome. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your Sunday morning with us. We invite you to fill out the online visitor form, which can be found on the homepage of our website, human.org. Someone from our membership team will be reaching out to you. And everyone is invited to join us for virtual coffee and conversation after the service, usually at 10:45. The link for the gathering can also be found on the homepage of our website, human.org.
This fire is a reminder of the light within us all, the yearning for freedom, the longing for truth, the flame of intuition, the torch of conscience. We dedicate this service to the remembrance of this holy light.
Listen, the Spirit is calling, by John Saxon. Listen, can you hear it? The Spirit is calling. It calls us in the silence and through the noise and busyness of our daily lives. It calls us in the brightness of the day and the darkness of the night, in times of hope and despair. Listen, can you hear it? The Spirit is calling. It doesn't matter what you call it, for it has no name and has many different names. The Spirit of life, the Spirit of love, the Spirit of compassion, the Spirit of hope, the Spirit of justice. Listen, can you hear it? The Spirit is calling. It's calling to you and to me. It's calling us to greater wholeness, greater connection, greater service, greater love. It's calling us to heal the brokenness within ourselves, in others, and in the world. It's calling us to live more deeply. It's calling us to beauty. It's calling us to laugh and dance and sing. It's calling us to live through life's pain and sorrow. It's calling us to live courageously and kindly, to speak our truth in love, and to bend the moral arc of the universe toward justice. It's calling us into community. It's calling us into the greater life of all. Listen. Can you hear it? The Spirit is calling.
Now is the time in the service when the ties that bind us together are spoken aloud. Tanya Romaine has a sorrow for her friend whose son was diagnosed with leukemia this past week. When he was diagnosed, they immediately scheduled surgery for a lumbar puncture, bone marrow biopsy, and put a stent in his heart. He also began chemotherapy on the same day as surgery. She asks that we please lift this dear boy and his family up in our hearts and send them light. Carolyn Lee has a sorrow. She says, Mark and I are deeply saddened by the passing of Kathy Quatochi, a former member of Human. Our girls grew up together at Human, and we were good friends with them outside of Human as well. Although we did not see Kathy and Mike much in the last couple of years, we still connected on Facebook, and they visited Human from time to time. Gone way too soon. If you have a joy or a sorrow that you would like to share with the congregation, please type it into the chat. I drop this final pebble for those joys and sorrows that remain unspoken. May we hold one another in our hearts until we are together again.
Good morning. Somebody recently asked me what an atheist prayer might look like, and it set me to thinking, not only about how atheists can access prayer, but also how they might experience transcendence or the connection to something greater, and whether there are any spiritual practices they might genuinely claim as their own. Many of you know that my own spiritual orientation is non-theistic, even atheist, although I think that term carries some unnecessary baggage in much of our society and doesn't always convey the deep spiritual connection and even appreciation of religious practice that can still be present. Back in the early days, when my wife Marty and I started attending a Unitarian Universalist congregation, we were chatting with some folks after service. Christmas was approaching, and someone asked us if we had plans for the rest of the weekend. Marty said, "Oh, Kim is excited about getting a Christmas tree." The person replied, "I thought Kim was an atheist." Marty leaned in and helpfully explained, "She is, but she's a non-practicing atheist." So perhaps I'm in a good position to talk about prayer and atheist spirituality. Working as a chaplain exposed me to a lot of people who rely on prayer for comfort during crisis. They would tell me, "I don't see how anyone can get through something like this without God." But I also encountered a fair number of people who didn't believe in God. One woman had been raised Christian, then converted to Judaism when she married a Jewish man, then found herself in a place of spiritual seeking after the marriage ended. Now that she was seeing her death on the horizon, she was seeking a firm spiritual grounding. She seemed most attracted to Christianity, but she was full of doubts. She spoke, for example, of the Council of Nicaea in the year 325, when bishops gathered to vote on matters such as the Trinity and the divinity of Christ, a vote to establish church doctrine so that the empire could have a single unifying body of Christian dogma. That seemed to her like a lot of human intervention in what was supposed to be a story of divine truth. And she had a hard time squaring a loving, benevolent God with the hardship she'd faced her whole life. She told me, "I don't really think there's a God, and I'm not sure Jesus was even a real person." But she longed for connection, and she wanted to be able to pray to Jesus like she used to. I suggested to her that if praying to Jesus helped calm her, helped her feel valued, helped her be centered, then it didn't really matter whether Jesus was real or not, whether God was real or not. If prayer is a ritual that brings you comfort, I told her, then it really doesn't matter what you believe. I wouldn't say that I have a regular prayer practice, but I do on occasion pray. Stories of animal neglect and abuse really hurt me. So when I come across them, I have a standard prayer. God, I pray, take care of the animals. Soften every human heart. It's not that I believe in a God who answers prayers. I don't. They are aspirational, not petitionary. It's a way for me to express my hopes for the world and to remind myself to keep my own heart soft in the face of hard realities and abhorrent human behavior. As part of my animal-loving nature, I absolutely loved when the fire truck would go by because my previous dog would howl at the sirens. Not at the police cars, not at the ambulances, just at the fire trucks. One day after this happened, I ran into a neighbor during a walk in the subdivision behind us. I asked how he was, and he told me that he was still shaken by an episode the previous evening. His next-door neighbor had had a heart attack and died, leaving a wife and two young children. I realized that the fire truck I had heard with the light had probably been responding to that man's death. It was then I realized that every fire siren, every ambulance siren, represented an emergency that was affecting real people. I still think of my dog when a fire truck goes by, and it makes me smile. But I also stop what I'm doing and offer a prayer for the person having the emergency. May they be treated with compassion, and may they and their family have all the support they need. I went to one of my high school reunions several years ago. The organizers had asked the three of us in our class who went into ministry to offer an invocation. When I arrived and walked across the parking lot to enter, I ran into a classmate who said, "I hear a rumor that you and Dave and Lauren will be saying a prayer tonight." "That's what I was told," I said. She said, "I'm an atheist. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to like being prayed to." I said, "I'm an atheist too. You might like my prayer." Later in the evening, after folks had gotten their first round of drinks, snacked on hors d'oeuvres, and caught up with each other a bit, the three of us were called to the microphone in the front of the room. The other two gave what I thought were fairly standard Christian invocations, asking God to bless and protect the group and bless the meal we were about to receive in Jesus' name. Then it was my turn. I prayed, "May the spirit of love that lifts and upholds us all descend upon us tonight. May we share ourselves openly in fellowship and caring. May this be a night of connection and renewal to bring us joy in our relationships today and going forward. These things I ask in the name of all that is holy. Amen." Later through the night, a number of people came up to me and thanked me for the prayer. Several people who had been raised Jewish said they appreciated the inclusiveness of it. One very devout evangelical Christian told me that during my prayer, she felt the Spirit of God descend on her and touch her. She was moved to tears. And my parking lot buddy, she came up to me nodding and said, "You were right. I'd liked your prayer. Thank you for making me feel included." Later that night, I had the opportunity to catch up further with her. She told me about some difficulties in her life and her increasing sense of mortality. She said, "Sometimes I wish I was a believer, so there was something I could hold on to. But I don't believe there is anything beyond the physical world, and after you die, there is nothing. It leaves me feeling sad and empty." "I also believe there's nothing after death," I told her, "but I find it comforting. Despite our lives being a tiny blip in time, I think we each have immeasurable value." I invited her to consider that we each had parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and so on, back in time, generation after generation, not only to the dawn of humanity, but to the dawn of life itself. That chain had to remain unbroken for all that time for us to be here. "You are a miracle," I told her. "We are each a miracle." And beyond that, beyond even the formation of our own solar system or galaxy, we were part of something unfathomably immense. And our bodies and the energy that animate them are part of it. We are made of stardust. And when we die, we return to the great, churning, changing mass of the universe, put into play 14 billion years ago by the Big Bang. And now cosmologists think that there may be multiple universes, like bubbles or intersecting membranes. So whether our own universe ends in a big crunch and restarts with a new Big Bang, or ends in a big freeze, we have been part of this unfolding process, and part of something that extends even beyond the beginning of time. It's like there's something eternal, and we are part of it. How could our lives not have meaning? We are part of the most compelling story ever. After she had a chance to mull on that a bit, she sought me out again in the crowd. "Thank you for telling me all that," she said. "I feel more settled about my beliefs and my place in the world." I was glad she was able to see another point of view, that we're part of something larger than ourselves, and it can provide a sense of meaning and transcendence. Now let's talk about miracles. I had a talk with a hospital patient one day. She had a degenerative disease that had left her completely disabled and largely bedbound, and she knew it would ultimately kill her. Her family was very religious and told her to pray for a miracle. But she said she didn't believe in a magic God who would miraculously take her illness away. She wanted to believe in miracles, she just didn't. I told her, maybe you just believe in a different kind of miracle. She had told me that her husband was super supportive and that she had almost randomly met him when she went to an online dating app. She had never been on one before and neither had he. And they posted their profiles the same day and met right away, even as both of them were thinking about deleting their accounts because they were suspicious about meeting people online. She said if she hadn't been on it that day, when he happened to be on it, they never would have met and her life would be much different. Maybe, I said, that was your miracle. As she thought about that, she started coming alive and telling me about other times of good fortune in her life. Maybe there is something, she said. Maybe it's not God, but maybe it's fate or luck or something. I think too about another patient, an atheist, who was dying from brain cancer. As I sat with him exploring the meaning he found in life, he told me about having raised children of good character and having been a professor where his students were now hearing about his illness and contacting him to tell him how much impact he'd had in their lives. That's a wonderful legacy, I told him, a real testament to how much your life has mattered. He knew the end would get ugly, and he wasn't afraid of dying, but he wanted to retain his own sense of self and continue to live as much as he could. You want to approach your death with integrity, I said, just like you've tried to live your life. That was also something that gave him meaning. These are wonderful examples of transcendence that are available to the atheist. One doesn't need a belief in God to feel touched by something powerful, important, even eternal. One doesn't need a belief in God to pray, even to pray to God if that feels helpful. And just like prayer is a spiritual practice available to the atheist, there are many non-theistic ways of connecting with one's sense of spirituality. Of course, there are Eastern practices that can be accessed outside the religions of origin, things like yoga or meditation. Becoming deeply aware of your body or the natural world can often be a way of feeling an expansiveness beyond the physical. I sometimes do a walking meditation where I direct my focus inward and simply pay attention to the sensation of walking, feeling my hips swing and pivot from the hips, feeling my heel strike the ground and the pressure of my foot as I push off, feeling the slight breeze on my face from my movement. I might tune myself to other sensations as well. What can I hear? What do I see? What do the clouds look like? How do the leaves sprout out from the twigs on the bushes and trees I pass? This type of meditative practice can help generate a sense of at-oneness with the body, the breath, the environment. Or what about the practice of journaling or poetry writing? A way to both focus and clear the mind and capture the thoughts and impulses that bubble up from our inner selves. Or a gratitude journal in which you record each morning three things you're grateful for. Say, a spouse, hot running water, opposable thumbs. It sets a positive tone for the day, and especially in these troubled times, helps us remember that joy and love and beauty are also part of our existence. One practice that I engage in, sort of like prayer, is that of lighting a candle for someone. I had one patient who was an atheist and quite bristly about religion. There were notes about it in his chart. The first time I met him, he was in the middle of a course of experimental chemotherapy, and about 5 days after each treatment, he would be in excruciating pain. The first two times, he had gone to the emergency room and was treated like a drug seeker, unable to get medication strong enough to provide relief on top of feeling judged and dismissed. His next chemo treatment was coming up and he was scared. I told him, I know you aren't religious, and you've said you don't want anyone praying for you, but I wonder if it might be helpful if I would light a candle for you on the morning of your chemo and think about you with the hope that your pain will be minimal. He brightened at that. Oh, that would be very nice, he said. Thank you. That would mean a lot to me. I wondered if that might even become a practice he would adopt for his own. Another thing I do, which I hadn't really thought about as a spiritual practice until thinking about this sermon, but that might fall into that category, is I have a practice of code switching. By that, I mean taking religious terms and reinterpreting them through my own philosophy of life. When I hear sacred or holy, I think of those things that feel of ultimate importance to me, the power of love or the expansiveness of the universe. When I hear God or Jesus, I just translate that into my own sense of awe and transcendence. The term prayer is one that I think of broadly, far beyond just a theistic prayer to God. And salvation can be living a good life or having a good death, rather than being saved from sin. This code switching allows me to access things like prayer or a sense of the sacred. It also allows me to accept others' prayers with grace. Even if they are praying to God or in the name of Jesus, if their intention is my well-being and care for me, I can accept that as the gift it is. One time when I was in chaplaincy training, in an episode of group processing, which was always interesting, one of my peers admitted that he prayed for me to find God and to become straight. My other peers and my supervisor were angry on my behalf, but I wasn't. He and I pinned opposite ends of the theological spectrum, and he truly believed that being gay or an atheist would consign me to hell, and the only way to God in heaven was through Jesus. If he believes that and cares about my welfare, how could he not want me to be straight and Christian? He didn't hate me. He wasn't attacking me. He simply wanted what was best for me within his worldview. I felt cared for. It also helps that I don't believe in God and don't believe that kind of prayer works. It's not like I thought his prayer was actually going to make me straight. Another place that code switching shows up for me is when people say, "Have a blessed day." It used to offend me, but no longer. From that person's worldview, they are simply expressing the hope that my day will be a good one. Code switching not only allows me to access my own spirituality and spiritual practice, it also lets me accept and benefit from others' spiritual expressions, even if my beliefs are opposite theirs. I hope these stories have given those of you who believe in God a greater appreciation of atheist spirituality. And I hope it has given those of you who are atheist greater access to the life of spirit that is available to you in whatever way feels meaningful. And now, to voice my hopes and express my care, I would like to leave you with this prayer. Spirit of life, dwell among us this day. Let each person here know to their bones the miracle that they are. Let each heart be open to its own inner life and to the possibility of spiritual practice and connection. Let each of us rest in that ocean of love that surrounds and fills us. May everyone here know that they are valued beyond measure. Their lives have meaning. They are beloved. May this community continue forth in health and strength, and may each member receive all that they need. In the name of all that is holy, amen.
When I was 31 years old, I decided to stop drinking, and I couldn't do it alone, so I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous and learned quickly that prayer and references to God and a higher power were a big part of that program. I had been a communist for years, and so I didn't just not believe in God, but I thought God was a capitalist plot to keep the workers oppressed. So it was a difficult transition for me to make. And I was helped a lot by the people in the program who told me it didn't matter if I didn't believe in God, that an atheist could get sober as well as a believer. And that all I needed to do was say please in the morning and thank you at night. And the fact that I wasn't saying it to anyone, but just saying it, was enough. I said please in the morning and thank you at night, and kept putting one foot in front of the other, one day at a time, and started to become a sober person. I was at a meeting when the speaker asked me about my belief in God, and I said I didn't believe in God and that I would like to have some sign that there really was a higher power, and that I didn't need a big miracle, just a small burning bush would do. And the speaker, who was a wise, longtime member of Alcoholics Anonymous, looked at me and said, "How long have you been sober?" And I said, "6 months." And he said, "You are your own burning bush." And it was true. When I thought about it, when I allowed myself to feel it, I was my own miracle, my own burning bush. And gradually over time, as I said please in the morning and thank you at night, there was a transformation. I started feeling like I was actually saying it to someone or something, a higher power, someone greater than myself who had restored me to sanity.
Nurture our spirit, strive for justice, transform the world. This is our mission. We fulfill this mission with our commitment of time, energy, and resources. Individually and together, we are Unitarian Universalists, building a world filled with peace and justice, love and joy. The offering will now be taken using the Givelify app.
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we're together again.
May our view of prayer and spirituality expand beyond the notions of our past. May we voice our own pleasures and sorrows to the universe, our own needs and musings, that it lift up our hearts for insight, peace, and healing. May it be so.